Aid groups say Israel has missed U.S. deadline to boost humanitarian aid entering Gaza.
While we receive testimonies from people on the ground asking, begging for pieces of bread, for water, the United Nations remains denied access to this area.
Israel says it has improved humanitarian aid to Gaza.
I showed you 900 trucks worth of aid that simply languishes in the sun at Kerem Shalom. This is aid which the UN should have picked up.
But with only 2 months left in the Biden administration, will the U.S. demands carry any weight?
I think clearly they were watching the U.S. elections, and we're hoping that Donald Trump would win and that would alleviate some of the pressure.
Today is Tuesday, November 12th. And this is The Issue from VOA. I'm Scott Walterman.
Hi, everyone, and I'm Lori London.
Children are dying. People are dying every day. We need more.
A month ago, the United States sent a letter to Israel telling it to allow more humanitarian aid into Gaza. The U.S. gave Israel 1 month to comply before it said it would potentially reconsider future aid support. Aid agencies say it has not happened. Louise Wateridge, senior emergency officer for UNRWA in Gaza.
The aid supplies have worsened. They have lessened. The month of October, it was an average of 37 trucks a day into the Gaza Strip. 37 trucks a day for a population of 2.2 million people who need absolutely everything.
Now, Israel says it has complied, and it's not their fault that the aid isn't getting into Gaza. Israeli government spokesperson David Mentzer.
I showed you 900 trucks worth of aid that simply languishes in the sun at Kerem Shalom. This is aid which the UN should have picked up and should have delivered. They have not. The failings are not with Israel.
In fact, Mentzer says, much more aid has been delivered to Gaza since they got the U.S. letter.
Let me give you a roundup of the picture since October. 741 aid trucks have been delivered to northern Gaza via the Erez West crossing. In coordination with the World Health Organization, 244 patients and their companions have been evacuated from hospitals in northern Gaza over the last month, and 50,000 liters of fuel, 180 blood units, hundreds of boxes of medical supplies and food have been delivered to support hospitals in northern Gaza.
You know, Scott, it's really interesting because we're hearing, you know, again, concerns over parts of Gaza, again, northern Gaza being on the brink of famine, the situation not getting better, getting worse. And yet, you know, we're hearing two different stories, and we're in the midst of a major transition with our own government as to what they are willing and not willing to do.
It has always been difficult since the beginning of the conflict to suss out what exactly is happening in Gaza, because there is such limited access to journalists, and we rely on what the Israeli government says and what the aid agencies like the United Nations say. And you're right, everything is about to change with the situation in the Middle East, because there's an entirely new U.S. administration coming in with a completely different point of view. So let's try to get some insight into what might happen in the coming months between Israel and the United States. Joining us for some perspective is Larry Garber, who was previously the U.S. Aid Mission Director to the West Bank and Gaza.
Thanks so much for being with us. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
So international aid groups are now saying that Israel has failed to meet U.S. demands that it allow greater humanitarian access to the Gaza Strip. The Biden administration, as you know, last month called on Israel to surge food and other emergency aid and gave it a 30-day deadline that expires today. Now that the Biden administration only has a very short amount of time to really take any sort of meaningful action before the new administration comes in, does this still carry any weight?
Absolutely, it carries weight. And the question is, what is going to happen tomorrow or the next few days. I mean, I think the Biden administration decided to move forward with a letter setting out the demands in order to push the Israelis, but giving them 30 days. And at least as part of, as far as the various organizations that are monitoring this and other actors show, that that they clearly are not in compliance, and they really have yet to make a serious good faith effort to meet the demands. And so I expect there'll be a discussion of exactly what the response is, but I don't think at this point there's any reason to assume that there would be no response. So whether it's a cutoff of certain arms or something more serious like action at the UN, I don't know. But I do think that once the letter has been sent and the Israelis have tried to ignore it or just take some cosmetic steps, there will be a response.
What do you think Israel's thinking in doing this?
Well, I think first there are pressures in Israel, domestic pressures in Israel that play into this and that make it harder for some of those who are committed to responding more proactively to the humanitarian crisis from doing so. So that's number one. Number two, I think clearly they were watching the U.S. elections, and we're hoping that Donald Trump would win and that would alleviate some of the pressure. And third, I think what's happening in the last 24, 48 hours has been that the Israelis are trying to signal that they are taking some steps, at least, hoping to get, you know, sort of a partial acknowledgement that this is a difficult environment to work in, and that they are on their way to complying with the U.S. Demands, but that it's going to take more time than the 30 days.
President-elect Donald Trump says he wants peace. He's vowed that he will bring peace to the region throughout his campaign. We have no specifics on that. How do you think that would look?
That's, you know, obviously the million-dollar question that's being asked in Washington these days. I think he's going to clearly make his position known in terms of a strong tie to Israel. But he's going to want particularly to avoid a major conflict between Israel and Iran. So I think that's, you know, his number one priority, because that would draw the United States into the conflict much more directly than the current state of play with Israel and Hamas or Israel and Hezbollah. I think, you know, if there's a deal to be made, he would definitely try to negotiate it and put some effort into it. But I think it'll only be if he's convinced that there is a deal to be made. And I think the terms that President Biden has been pushing, and I still hope he might be successful for, you know, reasons having to do with Israel's concern about the hostages and other things. But if he isn't successful, you know, I think President Trump, too, will be pressured on the hostage issue to at least keep the initiative going of facilitating negotiations between Israel and the intermediaries who are representing Hamas.
Do you think the Trump administration will be more lax and forgiving toward the Israeli government in their prosecution of the war?
Yes. I think President Biden has been criticized by many for not being critical of Israel or not holding them accountable for certain actions. But in truth, you know, he's tried to walk a very fine line, and his team has tried to walk a very fine line between, you know, having the close ties with Israel constantly reaffirmed, and at the same time trying to nudge them in a direction that's more consistent with U.S. interests and U.S. values. And I think President Trump will be much less concerned about the U.S. values part of that issue, and will be focused on, you know, what's in U.S. interests.
What about Saudi Arabia, though? How does that factor in, given Donald Trump seems to have a good, it would appear, relationship with Saudi Arabia, but Saudi Arabia is also very unhappy with the situation that is unfolding in Gaza and Lebanon?
Well, I mean, I think part of it is going to be what Saudi Arabia decides is in its interests. I think the Biden administration really did want to close the deal with Saudi Arabia, but proved unable once the conflict broke out. And Saudi Arabia has adopted a consistent position of wanting a clear commitment from Israel regarding a future vision for two states between, as a solution. And I think that is going to be their position. And I'm not sure how President Trump will be able to square it. I mean, it was just reiterated the other day, at the conference that this was hosted by the Saudis in the resolution, that is their bottom line. And for them to walk it back at this point, I think will create concern both in their amongst their allies in the Arab world, as well as perhaps among some of the folks in Saudi Arabia itself.
A little bit bigger picture, what do you anticipate in the region in terms of the new administration?
I think they'd like to, put it in the freezer for a while, but they can't. And so I think they will have to engage on the Israel conflict issue. So, again, less focused on the details of how Israel is prosecuting the war with Hamas or with Hezbollah, and much more of the big picture focus on, the future of the region vis-a-vis Iranian influence, and how to, make that less of a threat both to Israel and to broader U.S. interests.
They were hard on Iran in the first Trump administration. Do they return to that stance?
I think the people who are around Trump all endorse that type of approach. And so unless they see some possibility of Iran being willing to agree to certain steps that the United States wants them to take, I expect it will be perhaps even a stronger effort to pressure the Iranians.
So do you think Trump will defend Israel against Iran and not just say the America first way as we stay out of things?
Right. So I think that's, as I said earlier, that's his priority is to support Israel, to take Iran down a notch or two, but also to avoid being directly involved in a conflict between Israel and Iran. I think as long as it's sort of defensive type efforts, if Iran directs missiles at Israel, I think the United States will continue to support Israel through the naval carriers that we have in the region that will aim to take out the missiles before they arrive. But how far it would go in supporting Israel and taking offensive action against Iran, I think is still an open question.
And, back to the humanitarian situation, it doesn't seem like Netanyahu or Trump have a very clear vision for post-war Gaza, but it appears the situation is so dire that it's really unsustainable for much longer for survival. Where do you see this going as far as the people of Gaza and even the hostages that are being held, their survival?
So I think Netanyahu faces a dilemma in terms of his own thinking of what is going on there. And that's between, is this really a military effort to wipe out Hamas that he's prosecuting, or does it have a broader political context in terms of preventing Gaza from ever becoming really part of a future Palestinian state? And his cabinet is definitely divided about this. And this is where I think, the U.S. pressure needs to be constant, which is that there are still 2 million people living in Gaza. They are suffering from the most acute humanitarian crisis one could imagine, and that it's getting worse. And the effort needs to be on pushing the Israeli government to take steps necessary to alleviate that crisis that hopefully then can lead to, you know, a rebuilding of Gaza or some effort to improve the miserable quality of life that now exists. But so far, like I said, I think the schizophrenia within the Israeli government is continuing.
When you say prevent Gaza from being part of a future Palestinian state, you're talking about Israel annexing the land?
I don't think there'll be an appetite to annex the land. But I do think that by continuing the military pressure in Gaza, by preventing sort of in leadership to emerge in Gaza, it makes it very difficult to reconnect Gaza with the West Bank, which is clearly part of the formula for an independent Palestinian state. So, the government and Netanyahu doesn't even have to express we're against the two-state solution. It's just practically impossible under the current circumstances to imagine a two-state solution when Gaza and the West Bank are separated as they are, not only physically, but also politically. Many of us had argued for a couple of years now that the most important thing from a Palestinian perspective was to reunite the West Bank and Gaza under a single leadership. And that never happened. And so it's even more difficult now, given the realities on the ground.
Hmm. We really appreciate your taking the time to provide us your knowledge, expertise, and your insights. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Larry Garber, the former U.S. Aid Mission Director to the West Bank and Gaza.
So it's interesting, Scott, Axios is now reporting that U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken has decided not to change military assistance to Israel for now.
Well, that could mean one of two things, I suppose. Either they see it Israel's way, that Israel is doing everything they can to get aid in, or the administration has just decided in the last month and a half not to make any waves.
And apparently the report said that officials are still stressing that the U.S. wants to see more steps to address the humanitarian situation in Gaza. But, you know, as we said, one administration makes the decisions until they're no longer here, and that administration is winding down. It's only going to be here through January 20th. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. I think if we can be sure of only one thing is that it will be a very different sort of relationship with a President Donald Trump and Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu.
This has been The Issue from the Voice of America.
On behalf of all of us here at VOA, thanks so much for joining us.
Follow The Issue on X and Facebook at VOA The Issue. And for news 24/7, go to our website, voanews.com.
In Washington, I'm Lori London.
And I'm Scott Walterman.
We will talk to you tomorrow.